This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. 50 years ago, February 29th, 1968, a presidential commission released a report on why there had been so many uprisings, civil disturbances, riots by black citizens in cities across the country. The Kerner Report blamed the civil disturbances on white racism. Its most quoted line is, "Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black and one white, separate and unequal." A new book is out detailing the history of the Kerner Commission and its report. The title is Separate and Unequal, The Kerner Commission and the Unraveling of American Liberalism, and the author is Stephen Gillen. He joins us now. Before we get to the Kerner Commission, remind us exactly what happened in 1967 and the years prior to that, which led to President Lyndon Johnson appointing that presidential commission.
Well, you have to realize from 1964 through 1967, there were riots in American cities every summer. And the most intense took place in the summer of 1967 in Newark, New Jersey, and in Detroit, but also in dozens of other cities. And at the same time, during the 60s, there's also this spike in crime. So there's a sense that society is unraveling. So in the wake of the massive riots, uprisings in Detroit and Michigan, Lyndon Johnson decides that he needs to do something. He needs to assert presidential authority. So he creates the Kerner Commission to make recommendations to him about, there's really three questions he poses: what happened, why did it happen, and what can we do to prevent it from happening again?
Right. You've got a whole chapter on what do they want. Johnson was astonished. He couldn't understand why these uprisings were happening when he'd recently pushed civil rights legislation through Congress. How much did Johnson really understand about the position of African Americans in America?
There's sort of a split personality when it comes to Johnson. He certainly had tremendous empathy for African Americans. I mean, this is a guy who pushed through the Civil Rights Act of 64, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Here's a guy who spoke eloquently at Howard University about the problems facing African Americans. But on the other hand, Johnson personalized problems, and he felt that African Americans should be grateful to him for all that he was doing. He took it personally that they were rioting. So the way Johnson rationalized it to himself wasn't that these were uprisings, a rational response to the horrible conditions in the cities, but this was somehow a conspiracy, that there were a handful of people like Stokely Carmichael who were going around and instigating these riots. He couldn't understand the idea that these were actually rational. It had to be the product of some radicals who were taking people who were generally happy and satisfied and forcing them out into the streets.
Before things settled down in Detroit, the president announced his commission. It's handpicked by Johnson, including the supporting staff. He appointed Illinois Governor Otto Kerner as the chair of the commission, but you argue he wasn't really the leader. Liberal Republican Mayor of New York John Lindsay took a great deal of control over the direction of the commission. In what ways?
Beginning on the first day, John Lindsay said the only way we can prevent riots is to deal with the underlying causes of the riots, which is poverty, despair, a sense of people lack power and control over their own lives, that institutions are not responsive to their needs. He continued fighting until the very end. So much of that report is really the product of John Lindsay and also Fred Harris, Senator Fred Harris from Oklahoma. He and Lindsay were the two driving forces in pushing the commission to the left, and they faced a lot of resistance from some of the conservative members of the commission. Johnson came to resent Lindsay a great deal. He told the commission that he wanted them to follow the evidence wherever it took them. In fact, all he wanted them to do was to endorse his Great Society programs, and Lindsay was clearly pushing the commission to take bold positions that went far beyond what Johnson envisioned in his Great Society.
We don't have time to go over all of the grievances and the Kerner Report's recommendations in detail, but I want to just outline real quickly. They included things such as police practices, unemployment and underemployment, inadequate housing, inadequate education, poor recreation facilities and programs, ineffectiveness of the political structure and grievance mechanisms, disrespectful white attitudes, discriminatory administration of justice, inadequacy of federal programs, inadequacy of municipal services, and discriminatory consumer and credit practices, as well as welfare programs. Now, a commissioner attended a law enforcement convention and was shocked by what he saw as the militarization of police forces, and the report included some recommendations on that. What did he see and what happened because of that?
He went to a gathering of local law enforcement officials in Washington, and he was shocked that there were all these advertisements for military-style equipment, tanks, to suppress uprisings. And his whole perspective is that what the commission needed to do was to educate law enforcement about ways of using non-lethal methods to control uprisings. And you don't need tanks, you don't need military assault rifles. What you need is sort of more community engagement. You need to try to deal with the underlying issues that before they fester and turn into uprisings. And you also, I mean, he actually recommended a whole series of things that the police should be able to have, the types of weapons they should use, you know, things like tear gas and rubber bullets and so many other things. And a lot of his recommendations were discarded. Conservative members of the commission simply opposed any suggestion that the police were somehow responsible for the uprisings, and they watered down the recommendations that came from the field teams.
We mentioned that it was 50 years ago this week the report was turned in to President Johnson. How did Johnson feel about the findings of that report?
Well, he refused to even accept the report. He would not even sign the obligatory letters thanking the commissioners for their service. He was furious. And he was furious because he thought it was impractical that here he was, and you have to understand his position. This is 1968. The Republicans had made major gains in 1966. Congress is cutting many of the programs that already were part of the Great Society, and it was simply impossible for him to embrace a report that called for tens, if not hundreds, of millions of dollars in additional spending when he couldn't even get original programs funded. So he was just furious that he thought that the commission went AWOL and that it put him in a very difficult position. It took him weeks before he would even mention the Kerner Commission.
At this point, Johnson has decided he's not running for re-election. Republican Richard Nixon, who was running for president, saw the Kerner Report as useful to his campaign. In what way?
You know, 1968 is such a critical year because what happens is the tectonic plates of American politics shift. So the whole old New Deal, Great Society coalition is being ripped apart because of social issues, especially the Vietnam War anti-war protests and urban uprisings. So it's creating it's allowing someone like Richard Nixon to appeal to many traditional Democrats by talking about law and order, essentially claim that Democrats were soft on crime and that we needed to have a new regime that would be tough on crime. And the Kerner Commission, with its criticism of the police and its call for new social programs, in Nixon's mind and his advisors, this was rewarding the protesters and punishing the people who were trying to control some of the uprising. So the Kerner Commission comes out right in the beginning of this presidential campaign, and Richard Nixon, who had always been a racial moderate, now turns into a conservative populist. And there's all these, in the Nixon library, there's all these memos from his aides about how he should respond to the Kerner Commission. And essentially, their argument is that this is great for us because it allows us to position ourselves as being tough on law and order and also painting the Democratic possibilities, which are at this point were Hubert Humphrey and Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy, as being soft on crime. So I think in that sense, it contributes to this massive shift and the creation of this new conservative populism, which still dominates our politics today.
Your subtitle indicates the Kerner Commission factored into the unraveling of American liberalism. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the point I'm making is that if you look, we often look at the Kerner Commission, and justifiably so, as this bold statement about the way government and liberals should deal with urban problems. But if you look at the inner workings of the commission, you see all of the fractures that are existing in general society, existing within the commission itself. So you have these young field team representatives who are going into these urban areas, and they become deeply radicalized by their experience. And they believe that liberalism is too timid to deal with the profound problems that they face in the city, that liberalism with its emphasis on slow, gradual change simply would not be able to address the massive inequality. And the only way of doing that would be through some form of redistribution, which was simply not something that was a part of liberalism. And then you have people like Lindsay and Harris, who are who are sort of within the liberal tradition, but sort of the far edge of the liberal tradition. And then you have someone like Tex Thornton, who gets voted down on just about every issue. He was a conservative businessman, a Johnson supporter, but on the right wing of the liberal coalition. And he objects to everything. And his point he's making it every time they're talking about issues and talking about creating programs to help the poor, he says that this is really a law enforcement issue. This is about punishing people who break the law. This is about the erosion of authority in society. So Tex Thornton, even though he gets voted down on just about everything, he more than anyone else sort of predicts the way that American politics was going to move. So if you look at the Kerner Commission, it's a microcosm of the fractures and divisions that are emerging in American society in the 1960s.
A multimedia group called the Detroit Journalism Cooperative, of which I'm one of the reporters, looked at some of the findings of the Kerner Report and looked at Detroit 50 years after the uprising in that city. And we found not much has changed, and in some instances, things have gotten worse since 1967 in Detroit. How true is that of other cities which experienced riots in the 1960s?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think on the one hand, you know, it's impossible to deny the progress that's been made. There's been a softening of racial attitudes. African Americans are better represented, still underrepresented, but better represented in business and in the media. There's been the emergence of an African American middle class that did not exist in 1967, at least it was not nearly the size it is now. We've had an African-American president. So all that is clearly a sign of progress. But I believe that what the Kerner Commission said is we're becoming two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. And I think for those who have been left behind in these decaying urban centers, that they are more cut off from mainstream American society, that they are more separate, that the problems they face are more profound. And the problem we have is that one of the things the Kerner Commission said is what we need most of all is the political will to deal with these problems. And that political will is evaporated over the past 50 years, and it's non-existent today. While there's been tremendous improvement, I believe that in places like Detroit and in Newark, these urban areas, in many of these major cities, those people who are stuck there are more segregated from American society, have fewer opportunities and less hope than they did 50 years ago.
As you pointed out, the Kerner Report was basically shelved by the White House. And as you say, the nation chose a law and order president in Richard Nixon. But what is the lasting legacy of the Kerner Report 50 years after its release?
First of all, it's a marker that we can turn to see how much progress or lack of progress has been made. And we can get a sense of what has happened over the past 50 years so we know what we need to do when we eventually develop the political will to do it. But it's also, I think it is a powerful and important document that anyone who talks about race relations, anyone who talks about urban unrest, anyone who talks about discrimination, you have to go back and look at the Kerner Commission. Most of the attention is on those lines in the preface about white racism and becoming two societies. But the document itself is filled with data, overwhelming, convincing information that proves beyond any doubt that African Americans are treated poorly and that they live in horrible conditions. So that sort of deeply researched and convincing information becomes a reference point for anyone who talks about race and riots in America. And I think that when we finally come to our senses and develop the political will and come to recognize that racism is still a profound force in American society, that maybe we'll turn back to the Kerner Commission and realize what we have failed to do and find the will to do it.
Stephen M. Gillen is the author of Separate and Unequal, The Kerner Commission and the Unraveling of American Liberalism. Thanks for writing this.
Thank you. I really appreciate your interest in the Kerner Commission and the issues that it raises.